You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story. My guest this week is Lindsay Peterson.
Brand creates focus. It helps you prioritize. It's because it's a North Star, it can help the leader to allocate resources.
Lindsay is the author of Forging an Ironclad Brand, A Leader's Guide. She is a strategist and leadership coach who views brand as a blend of science, intuition, behavioral economics, and ancient storytelling. She developed the Ironclad Method while building brands with companies such as Starbucks, Clorox, Zulily, T-Mobile, IMDb, and burgeoning startups. Lindsay lives in Seattle with her husband and two children. For more information, you can visit IroncladBrandStrategy.com and follow Lindsay on Twitter. Lindsay, welcome to On Brand.
Hi, Nick. I'm so happy to be here with you this morning.
So I love that your bio gets right into it there, doesn't it? I suppose with being someone that is aiming for ironclad, you've left absolutely no mystery to what you're about, because you get right into what I usually creep up to in these conversations about branding and saying what it is or what your definition is going right out of the gate. Can you talk a bit about that blend of science, intuition, behavioral economics, and ancient storytelling?
Yes, I love that. Thank you. I guess that means that in a lot of ways, I've already been a little bit on brand with my biography. So, So as your listeners are really well educated on brand, and in a lot of ways, the readers of my book are less educated on brand. So I really level set at the beginning with what a brand even is. And the definition I use for brand is what you stand for in the mind of your audience. So it's that real estate in their head that you own. And I contend that it's worth it to be really deliberate about defining what you want that meaning to be, because not all positions in their minds are created equally. Not all possible brand directions are equally value creating. So I start with that. And the blend of kind of the right brain, left brain, analytical and intuitive is to kind of reconcile that the kind of the reputation, the brand of brand among non-marketing people, among leaders, especially the ones that I work with that tend to be software and technology, a lot of B2B. Brand has kind of a reputation for being soft. And there is a component of brand that is soft, but it's not just soft. It also has the ability to create huge economic value. So it's actually born from economics. It's born from the idea that brand enables you to elevate your pricing power, to be different, to stand out. So I like to kind of acknowledge right up front with my readers that, yes, there is this intuitive, right-brained, creative, beautiful component to brand, but it's not only that. It also is in service of the hard stuff.
Well, and I think that that's kind of the probably literally the million-dollar question with branding. It's funny you mentioned soft. I often opt for squishy, is what I say.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a bit soft too, but it's just hard for people to get their arms around, especially when you talk about analytical businesses, professions, folks that you're working with on brand projects that come at it from that analytical standpoint. But I find that you have to get to that blend or at least come in through that door to bring some of these other squishier things to bear, because behavioral economics doesn't often get to sit with ancient storytelling, but brand somehow does that.
Yes, and it's funny because, and I think you've talked about this before in your podcast as well, that the word story has become this buzzword.
Yeah.
That's which kind of gets on my nerves. All buzzwords tend to get on my nerves. But the thing about story, and it, I suppose it depends on, just like with anything else, it depends on how you define it. But I think of story as problem solution or tension and resolution, or, you know, some drama that a person is going through and how they resolve that drama. So brand and business, which in some ways I think of as synonymous, exist in order to create that resolution, in order to take a customer, an audience member, from struggling through a problem to mastering that problem. That's what we see in the structure of story, and that's what our customers are living. So by acknowledging that and using that as a tool or as a framework for kind of inviting them into your business is just using their neurological structure, that they're drawn to that, to help them to let in your business, to help them to build a relationship with your business.
Well, it that is kind of probably as frequent listeners know, that's something we get to a lot with, you know, the kind of the abuse of the concept of story. And I don't know that we've ever back to back talked about the concept of brand is challenging enough, and then story is in a lot of ways even squishier. And yet today, I feel like we often see these buzzwords combined, and we kind of risk making smoke come out of the ears of the of our analytical minded other side of the brain peers. And it's important because we're often either working with, selling to, or some combination thereof of making these this dynamic seen and relevant.
Yes, and I mean this is getting kind of meta, I suppose. But when we're when we as brand builders are talking to anybody, whoever our client or our audience happens to be, it's useful to start from how do they perceive this world? How do they perceive this category? What is their frame of reference? And that matters a lot because then you know what to start from. So for when I'm working with marketing leaders, they already get a lot of the premises that we've been talking about so far. When I'm talking with a leader who thinks that marketing and brand are squishy and brand belongs in marketing and should be delegated and or given to an agency or kind of tidily tucked away somewhere where he or she doesn't have to look at it, I try to see from this person's perspective. This person is incredibly busy and they have huge economic and financial pressure. And I think, okay, so how can brand help this person? Well, brand creates focus. It helps you prioritize. It's because it's a North Star, it can help the leader to allocate resources and determine how he or she should spend his time and who he should hire and how he or she should hire, right? So brand creates that focus. And then with the financial pressure, well, the opposite of being a commodity is being a differentiated business. And brand is, in my opinion, the only truly sustainable differentiating factor for a business, because eventually everything else can be copied, but you can't copy a brand that you've been reinforcing in people's minds over time. So brand creates focus and a prioritizing mechanism for the leader, and it also helps him or her to create economic value by creating a competitive moat and enabling customers to see why they should pay above and beyond the cost of goods for what they're offering.
Are you enjoying this conversation about branding? If so, I'd love to bring my Brand Now keynote speech to your next conference or corporate event. Based on my popular book, Brand Now, this talk breaks down the seven dynamics of building a standout brand in our crowded, distracted world. Entertaining and educational, your audience will learn, laugh, and leave with ideas they can implement right away. Learn more, including watching video and viewing popular presentation topics at nickwestergaard.com/speaking. That's nickwestergaard with two A's .com/speaking. Now back to the show.
I just encountered an article over the weekend that was talking about how long subtitles of business books have gotten. And it's funny because go scan your bookshelf and most will see that this is true. It's like we go for these clear and concise titles, but if we had to leave any words out, we just cram it into that subtitle. But I bring this up too because of your last point. Yours is refreshingly simple. We talked about the title being Forging an Ironclad Brand. Your subtitle is even shorter because you specifically call it a leader's guide. And I think that there are so many books out there about branding today, and I really can't think of others that have things positioned from the leader's perspective. And ultimately, I can't think of an organization where that wouldn't be probably the most important audience.
Oh my gosh, it's so funny, Nick, because the creating a subtitle, this was so difficult for me. And I there was a long time where my working subtitle was, what's a brand, why should you care, and how to make yours ironclad. Like the longest subtitle. I mean, even given how long subtitles have gotten, it was so long. And it wasn't until this felt like a, you know, cobbler's children wearing no shoes sort of thing, because somebody, actually one of my clients who's a CEO, said, no, like way too long. And he was right. And it's really, it's like, you know, it's hard to see the inside of your own eyelids. It's so much easier to use a lot of words. But I kind of took my own medicine and whittled it down to what I really mean, which is this is a guide for leaders. And there are a lot of really, really powerful, useful books that are written for marketers. And there probably are a lot of really great books that are written for leaders that aren't the leaders that I happen to work with. So I really was channeling my client, my right audience, when I was writing this book, and then eventually, after a little intervention from a client with the title and subtitle of the book as well.
I think that's a great story. It's funny. I was thinking back to the two books that I've written, and the titles were just done. But boy, those subtitles, there was a lot of looping around on what they were and what they would be. And like you said, how to do all of the everything under the sun in one easy book. Please, for the love of God, buy it.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if it reminds me of sometimes, especially with internet brands, the logo, the brand name of the business and the tagline is kind of the analogy here. The taglines are getting really long for businesses. Like they're trying to cram in as much as possible to that prime piece of real estate that is their tagline. I wonder if there's something similar going on with books.
I feel like both of them are really kind of like hedging our bets.
Yeah.
Like, what if someone doesn't get the logo? It should just make sure we have all of the words that just dummy proofs it sometimes to our own detriment. You talk about leaders and connecting some dots here. you talk about the blend of the kind of the art and science of branding. And I would imagine that there's leaders that are working dominantly in both in either hemisphere of the brain alone, the more scientific analytical side, and the perhaps more visionary, the art side of branding. But I would have to imagine that some of the most successful leaders are the ones that are synthesizing those two hemispheres and can kind of toggle back and forth. And I would think that to understand brand from a leader's perspective, that dance, that blend is critical.
Yes, that's exactly right. And that's exactly what I find is the most successful leaders, or the leaders that most successfully employ brand, are the ones that are not afraid to go to their non-dominant side of their brain. And the trick for a brand guide who's taking this leader through that is to ensure that they're not so far out of their comfort zone that they get wigged out by how, you know, say how squishy it's gotten or how analytical it's gotten, and to use both. And I think that it echoes the audience, because our customers, the audience, the people that we're trying to get to be aware of our brands and to buy our brands, they too are complex whole people who have both a right brain and a left brain. They buy things for rational reasons as well as for emotional reasons. That there's both, that it spans the whole person. And the same thing goes, this is kind of meta, but the same thing goes for when you're building brand, to sort of honor both of the, it's not literally true that the right brain and the left brain are at work, but to harness all of the power of who we are to define why our business deserves to exist. That's what our brand strategy really is an articulation of that. So you want to use both. You are setting yourself up for more success if you can use both, because that's how our customers operate.
So we've talked about the who. In looking at the what, tell us about your ironclad method that you've developed and what that entails.
Yeah, in some ways, and this is true with my clients and my audience, in some ways, just by saying that there's a step-by-step method for doing this, that alone alleviates all kinds of anxiety. Like, oh, there's a container for this. There's a process for this. I'm not just waiting for the muse to come and tell me what my brand should be. I can, with agency, create it by following some steps. So that alone is part of the idea here, is that there is a method. You don't have to kind of just wait passively for the idea to dawn upon you. So that's the first thing. The way that I, as a brand strategist myself, take clients through this are the steps that I defined in my book, The Ironclad Method. It's kind of chronological, although it's not, there's a lot of iterativeness to it, but it starts with who even are you serving? You know, who even is your target customer, and what are they doing today because they don't use or aren't aware of your offering? You know, just starting with, like, what's the orientation here? And when you establish that context of who you're optimizing for, who is this target customer, and what are they currently doing to solve their problem, you can get a lot more efficient with the rest of this. You don't have to think about everybody or all competitors. You can just think about your sweet spot target customer and what you're competing with for those customers. And then it goes into, you probably don't want me to go through all of the steps, although I'm happy to, but then it goes into, okay, now we're going to listen. Who are these? What are these people saying? What is their life like? What is it like to be this person trying to solve the problem that they're trying to solve when they're using either your competitor's offering or some sort of workaround solution or substitute, you know, what's it like? And that kind of yields these insights, it helps you to be empathetic. It helps you to have these raw building blocks to go into setting apart your business for this target customer who is facing this particular problem.
I love all of this, and especially that first point that you made about just having frameworks. The idea of having something to be able to point to, I think, makes it a little bit easier, makes it concrete to grasp from a lot of those that have the squishy problems with it. It makes me think, you know, branding is also not an easy box to check. I think that's the other thing that makes it a little scary to folks that can't get their arms around it, because there's also an aspect of which, say there's a major new initiative, a new branding process that we're undertaking, but a lot of times that work continues. So are there frameworks and best practices for how brands continue to kind of touch on all of those points that you're talking about, but once things are operationalized and running, how you continue to live that brand?
Yeah, this is such a good question. And I think that the kind of ongoing change management of brand is yet another reason why the leader has to own brand. Because here's the thing, when you're making decisions, when you, as say you're a product manager or you're a customer service agent or you're a customer success representative and you're making decisions and you're talking to the customer all the time, you need air cover. If you're going to make decisions that are on brand, every time you make a decision that is on brand, you're inherently making a trade-off. You're deciding we're going to lean into this thing that is on brand at the expense of this other thing. And people will only do that if they know that their leader truly, truly believes in the brand, right? So the kind of necessary but not sufficient condition for a brand to be expressed all the time throughout the business is that the leader believes it and models it. And that's probably the most important thing for ongoing operationalization of the brand, is that the leader is showing his or her audience, the employees, as well as the general public and customers, that he or she believes in it, so much so that for difficult decisions, they'll use the brand to litigate those decisions. So I think that's key, that the leader has this conviction in the brand. Otherwise, they either die on the vine, or when times get tough, the brand is sort of tucked away. And then eventually you don't really have that brand anymore. So the leader modeling the brand is key, ongoing. And if the leader has a lot of conviction in the brand, it's a lot more likely that they will model it. I also, like, kind of this is a really tactical idea for ongoing operationalization, is that all of the people who touch the customer, all of the people who work for a company who are either explicitly or implicitly embodying the brand, they should know it through and through, and they should have visual reminders of it. So I like for folks to have a one sentence about the brand that's, you know, blown up into poster size and put in meeting rooms or laminated and given to all employees, because a lot of the times people just forget. They just don't remember what it is, because they're human beings and they're caught up in the day-to-day pressures. So just by keeping it really visually present, you also help to ensure coherence with the brand, with those decisions, big and small.
I that's such a critical point too, the one sentence, something that you can grab onto, because you talked about from the leader's perspective of the brand being the North Star. And it has to be, everything has to start with leadership, but also in order how that is lived day in and day out, it has to be graspable to everyone else. I mean, I think, keep on the navigational metaphor, we have a compass. We know that there's a north, south, east, west on there. Just having something that we can grab onto, some sort of simple sentence. And, you know, it's important to have frameworks and everything else, but you have to have that boiled down handle that folks can grab onto and use in their work as well.
Yes, and I'll even go farther and to say that the frameworks are merely a tool to getting to that sentence.
Yeah.
The frameworks are not an end unto themselves in most cases. Sometimes they're so helpful to people that they become that, but they really are tools. They're tools to helping to distill, because if it's going to be one sentence, or ideally less than one sentence, like, you know, one word, that's the ideal. That's the easiest for people to grok. In order to get to that, you need some scaffolding, and that's what the frameworks and the steps are. There's no need to, you know, fetishize the frameworks themselves, because they're really in service of getting to the crux of what this business is going to stand for.
Well, as we start to wrap up and get to the brand that's made you smile, I wanted to mention that in reading your bio, there's a brand that makes me smile in there that I probably interact with daily because I am a big fan of movies, of entertainment, TV shows. So I am always referencing IMDb, and people always flip it back on me. What's a brand that makes you smile? And I am sometimes like a deer in headlights, and that's a perfect example of a brand that is a daily interaction that I love. So thank you for your work there and for being a part of a brand that makes me smile.
Oh, I love that, Nick. That's great. You beat me to the punch because I was going to ask you that question.
Aha, well, I've luckily had an answer this time. I could look a little smarter than I have other weeks. But flipping it back on you, as is my job and obligation as host, Lindsay, what's a brand that's made you smile?
Trader Joe's. I love Trader Joe's as a student of brand, but especially as a consumer. When I shop at Trader Joe's, I normally consider grocery shopping to be drudgery, but when I shop at Trader Joe's, I feel uplifted and I feel understood as a busy working mom who doesn't have time or emotional energy for a lot of chaos while running errands. I feel really understood by Trader Joe's. I love their products. I love their chili lime cashews. I love their strawberry and banana yogurt that my kids love. I love their products. I love their prices. I love the little coffee samples you get. I love that they have a treasure hunt if you have kids with you while you're shopping. And the interactions with the Trader Joe's employees always feel positive. And in a way, I don't think you can fake it. I think they actually like working there. So shopping at Trader Joe's always makes me smile.
Well, that's a great example. And I think, you know, we have some repeat brands mentions, but I'd have to go back and check. I'm not sure anybody's ever mentioned Trader Joe's. And boy, the minute you said that, I thought, wow, if that's not an archetype for a brand that makes you smile, an exemplary model there, because, yeah, like you said, everybody's smiling ear to ear. They've got Hawaiian shirts on, for crying out loud. So definitely a smile-worthy choice. Lindsay, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Yes, thank you for that opportunity, Nick. So my book is Forging an Ironclad Brand, and it's available on Amazon, etc. And if listeners are interested, I have a free giveaway on my business's website, which is ironcladbrandstrategy.com. It's a workbook that I adapted from the book Forging an Ironclad Brand, and it serves as a supplement to the book. So it's the step-by-step workbook guide of the Ironclad Method for building a brand strategy. And you can find this at ironcladbrandstrategy.com.
Well, that is great. So a workbook to take you through the process that we've been talking about on this episode. Lindsay, thank you for joining us on Brand.
My pleasure, Nick. Thanks so much for having me.
And as a reminder, you can find all of those links to everything that we talked about at onbrandpodcast.com. If you like what you're hearing, remember to subscribe to the show via Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you like to listen. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. For more on me, including how you can sign up for my In Case You Missed It newsletter, please visit nickwestergaard.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.